Welcome to My Morning Cup, a podcast produced by Costa Media Advisors and brought to you by the generous support of the Tennessee Valley Authority. To learn more about TVA's impact on our community, follow TVA on Instagram at TVA and on Twitter X at TVA News. My Morning Cup, where we have interesting conversations with genuine people. I'm Mike Costa, your host. My guest this week is Patrick Wells, who got an early taste of the startup business world when he won a business plan competition while in college. As a result of that interest, Patrick is now the CEO of not one, but two companies, Majestic Stone and Stoneloads. Patrick, welcome to My Morning Cup. Before we talk about going from a legal outsourcing company to auto salvage to stone quarries, let me ask, what's in your morning cup?
Good morning, Mike. I just take it black.
You just take it black, huh?
Just black.
My kind of guy. Right. But you're caffeinated, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How many?
One to two. If I do any more than two in the mornings, I get jittery. I can't handle it. So a quick transition to water after that.
Yeah. Do you drink coffee any other time of day?
It gets too late. I can't sleep. But around 1, 2 o'clock, that 2 o'clock hour, I'll typically have a cup of coffee. Same thing. Just take it black.
Yeah. And we were talking a little bit earlier. I'm the same exact way, except I did away with the caffeine a few years ago. And that way I can drink it all day if I want to drink it all day. But I don't. I generally quit about 10 o'clock.
That makes sense. I've got some good friends of mine. They drink coffee all day long. They just love it and drink all day long. They sleep fine. I'm just not wired that way.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
I grew up in a family business and it was a materials handling company. And so, it was forklifts and we had a shop and the mechanics, this is 1980, and the mechanics would walk around all day with two things, a cup of black coffee and an unfiltered cigarette. But I'm way off subject. You are the spirit of what Chattanooga is becoming today, which is, I'm going to say, an age 30 to 40 somethings coming to town, starting businesses, that whole entrepreneurial community. But you got the bug by winning a business writing competition. Tell me about that.
Yeah. First of all, I had no idea that, growing up, dad was a mechanic, mom, stay-at-home mom. The idea that you could actually start your own business was so foreign to me. And so, but in college, as part of the curriculum, we're really told, like, hey, you're going to write a business plan. Mm-hmm. And not only are you going to write one, we're going to enter them all into a business plan writing competition.
Was this Alabama or Samford?
So this was Samford. Yeah, I'd spent the first 3.5 years at Alabama. I was on track scholarship there. I pole vaulted, actually.
Oh, wow.
And my coach that was an assistant coach at Alabama, got the head coaching job at Samford and asked me to come with him. And so, I had some additional eligibility left because I had multiple ankle surgeries in college. And so I'd medical redshirted. So I had some eligibility. So I went to Samford and I was going to, quickly finish my undergrad and then jump into graduate school. And so doing finance undergrad, jumped into kind of writing this business plan, and they had all these different rounds. It was called Regions New Venture Challenge.
Okay. So Regions Bank at Birmingham.
Exactly. And entered the competition, got through the first round, had to present, and then round after round kept progressing through and got to present in front of the board of directors there. And to my surprise, I actually won the competition.
What was the business you wrote about?
Yeah, it was a really simple model.
Those are the best.
Everybody wants to tailgate before football games. And so just how do you build a business around tailgating, really events and putting tents up, catering food for people, basically presenting a simple package for people that were coming to the games of, all right, for $1,000, we'll get you a tent and this set of food. And just that kind of catering service, event service before football games and basketball games and things like that on campus.
So I do a lot of tailgating at the University of Tennessee. Been doing it for years. We got some friends who live up there who do all the hard work. And that plan is so turnkey and so perfect.
Exactly.
Did you implement it?
So no, we didn't. But after winning the competition, we won like $5,000. And which was a big deal when you're in college and
a lot of tailgate parties.
That's right. And so that was the question everybody was asking
me,
was, are you going to do it? And that question right there is what changed my life, because for the first time I had people telling me that I had a good idea, or that like, hey, are you actually like do this?
Mm-hmm.
And at first it was no. Like, I just wrote it. I'm not, there's a big difference between writing it and doing it.
Was there some fear?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, being an athlete, being super competitive, fear is just part of it, right?
Yeah. It's kind of what drives you, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. You never, and especially in track, no one's ever beat the bar. No one's ever beat the time. It's all about just getting a little bit higher, jumping a little bit higher, or jumping or running a little bit faster, jumping a little bit farther, throwing a little bit farther.
So incremental improvement.
Exactly. Exactly. And you might have, you know, some big increases year over year, but at some point things are going to kind of start to plateau. And then what do you do from there to continue to grow, continue to get better? And so I accepted it as more of a challenge. Now, we didn't do that business, mm-hmm. but from that experience, I started getting invited to like Birmingham's new business incubator, and it just began getting exposed to a world that I did not know existed.
What is it about Alabama and Samford, and really, and I'm asking this because the Ted Ayling connection, the Cam Duty connection with Auburn and his bellhops and all that. What's in the water?
I don't know, but you're right. There does seem to have been some great people that live in Chattanooga now that are from Birmingham. They definitely kind of have that innovative spirit.
Yeah. I look at Birmingham's transition over the years, and it's really transitioned itself as a city from a large industrial southern city to really a modern southern city.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it definitely has followed a similar pattern to what seemed to be Chattanooga's. I mean, Chattanooga seemed to have paved the way.
Yeah. I do want to go back a little bit on your growing up and talk a little bit about how you grew up and being an athlete, because we were talking a little bit earlier about kind of the differences in my generation. I'm 61 and you're probably, what, 22?
37.
And you know, as we were talking about, your generation seems to have this drive or bug that says, you know what, I can be an entrepreneur, I could do it myself. And as we were talking, my generation coming out of school, the most important thing was to find something secure and something safe. And so I know you said your dad was a mechanic and both your parents worked for Fortune 500 companies. What was the pressure like there from them? Because I would imagine they're looking at you going, okay, Patrick, you're out of school now, do the smart thing.
Yeah. Probably a good combination of both. It was definitely, so I was finance undergrad, got my MBA, and I thought I was going to go the route of, you know, investment banker, go to Wall Street. And there was definitely this pressure of, you know, get a good, safe job, work there. I mean, my dad has been with Caterpillar for 20 something years. He was with the company before for a long period of time. My mom's been at the insurance company she's at for 25 or so years, you know? So it's definitely felt the pressure of like, get somewhere, stay, work the corporate ladder, but that just didn't fit.
And what lit that fire was that business plan writing competition.
Yeah, that, and I would also say that there's always been a handful of men in my life that have encouraged me to just pursue more. Like, don't, you know, talk about that little fear earlier. Yeah. Don't pay attention to that. Like, if you have something, if you have an idea, if you have something in your heart, like that you want to pursue, like, go for it. Laugh. Like, that was like the constant thing. Like, laugh. Don't take yourself too seriously.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's okay if something doesn't work out. Try again. Try something else. And so that constant encouragement from others really made a huge difference in me. And you were talking about like the difference in our generation and how, you know, many of us are, you know, maybe entrepreneurs. Well, your generation paved the way for that. I look at, you know, I was not to jump ahead too far, but like, when we came to Chattanooga, I joined a private equity group here in town. And, you know, who funded that private equity firm? Your generation. Yeah. I mean, y'all have been the ones that have encouraged us to go, to build, to drive, and offered wisdom and counsel along the way and support and wear us out from time to time. Yeah. Of like, get after it. Let's make sure we're hitting our numbers and really growing. But it is interesting to me how that an innovative spirit really started with you guys, your generation, and ours are just kind of maybe seemingly running faster with it.
You know, I think part of that is, lack of better term, a little Monday morning quarterbacking. Sure. And what I mean by that, someone like myself works a corporate job most of their life, and then you get into your 50s and 60s and you start to look at other things, or you leave that job and you think, you know, why didn't I do this earlier? What was keeping me back? And a lot of times it's probably more of a financial fear, a fear of failure,
yeah,
more than anything
yeah
else. Related to that, addressing fear, you're a college athlete. I saw you said you always wanted to play basketball, but you're a pole vaulter, which is, I can't imagine running down a track and sticking a pole in the ground and flying over a bar. I mean, you have no fear.
At some point, it becomes self-preservation. You're just doing everything you can not to end up back on the track.
And how do you get into pole vaulting?
Man, you got to know somebody, first of all. You have to know
someone you like, or
yeah,
somebody
exactly
like you.
Yeah, I mean, I still get asked, do you still pole vault?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, let me show you.
Yeah, it's not like I could, like, there's like pole vault courses and stuff around where you could just go play or jump. I mean, no, I don't pole vault anymore. I would die. But yeah, I got into it in middle school and was no good. My dad's younger brother, who's 13 years younger than him, pole vaulted, tried, and he learned because somebody else. And it's just one of those things. I was playing so much basketball. I grew up, you know, playing all the different sports, yeah, and narrowed it down. All I wanted to do was play basketball all the time. And my dad said, look, we got to do something else. You're going to get burned out. And so in the spring, I ran track and pole vaulted, because pole vaulting, it's the combination of, you know, speed, strength, balance. I did not want to run long distance, couldn't do it. Yeah. And so pole vaulting became the thing, and in middle school started again, was no good. And then finally hit a growth spurt in ninth grade and started to get better.
How much did that sports involvement affect you in your later years in terms of work ethic, in terms of teamwork and things like that? Is that something you look back on and say, that was very important for me to be involved with?
Yeah, for sure. Basketball, which I love and I still play actually, is so much a team sport, right? You can't do it on your own. And then track is a very much an individual sport.
Mm-hmm.
And both taught me so much. I like the team aspect more because, I mean, that really, I mean, when you talk about work and business and you know, even John Maxwell says, like, nothing significant happens with just one person.
Yeah.
It takes a team. And, but like, you learn hard work, you learn pace and endurance. And, I mean, what you put into something is what you're going to get out of it. And that definitely fuels you in your business career and startups. And you just won't take no for an answer a lot of times. So that definitely positively like impacted me and my drive. Now, there are definitely some drawbacks too, which I think get overlooked sometimes, that sports train us for seasons. And, you know, every season you have a championship and there's a scoreboard and you know if you've won or lost. And when you get into business, yeah, you can tell if you've, you know, if you're winning or losing, but it's a lot longer season. You're not training hard for just an event. You're having to understand pace and you're having to understand, hey, we're building this for 15, 20 years. And that yeah has taken a lot of adjustment.
There's not a championship every year where you get a trophy for being the best business. There's recognitions, but
yeah,
if you're building a business, it's, well, you just talked about long distance running. It's a marathon.
It absolutely is. Yeah. Still talk to a lot of my friends and stay engaged with people that are coming out of college, former college athletes. And that's one of the hardest things they talk about. That's one of the things they talk about is the hardest, is that adjustment from the like 6 to 9 month season mm-hmm. cycle to now coming out into work. And they're not operating on that same season schedule.
Is that why freight brokers hire so many former athletes? Because that just seems like a highly intense, you know, every day is a locker room speech. And
yeah, probably. That makes sense now. Maybe that's where I need to be.
I think you're doing okay where you are. Let's kind of get back to your career arc. So you went to school at Alabama, and I'm sorry about that. And then you transferred to Samford. And, as I mentioned earlier, Samford, at least to me, has this reputation now of churning out a lot of innovative and entrepreneurial type folks. So you get out of school and what do you do? You had mentioned possibly going and working in finance on Wall Street.
Yeah, that's where I thought I was headed, and was approached by a couple attorneys, and they're actually out of Mobile, mm-hmm. Alabama. And they have a great personal injury law firm down there. And they had an idea of really leveraging the expertise that they had developed in their back office staff and in the processes they had put in place to settle accident injury cases and work with their clients. And their thought was, could they leverage that back office support process and team and offer that to other, smaller attorneys across the country? And they had kind of a loose idea, and they came to me and said, hey, could you do some analysis and see if this is worth pursuing? And then they came to me and asked me that first. And I said, okay, sure.
And this is right out of school. So you've graduated. And are they interviewing you for a job, or are they saying, hey, you're a smart guy, you won the business plan writing competition, and here's a contract?
Yeah. It was even less than that. I was about 6 months. I was in my last semester before I graduated. And so I did it for free because I was just looking for exposure and I had fun doing it. And so I did
Which
it
is
for,
a good thing to do in college.
Gosh, I learned so much just doing things for free.
Yeah.
And but you can only do that for so long. But my wife would kill me now if I did it. But wrote the business plan for them and presented it to them. And they were like, wow, okay, this is great. Will you do it? And so again, that question of like, are you going to do it?
Yeah.
And I had the same answer initially. No. I just write. I don't do. Right? No, come help us. We'll help you get started. And again, that common theme of like people really nudging me like, mm-hmm. hey, go, like, come on, help, go, do. And after some back and forth, I said, all right, what do I have to lose? I'm just coming out of school.
Right.
I guess I can always, like, if this doesn't work, go back and pursue kind of the Wall Street route or go where I was going. And so I just kind of said, well, sure. Yeah, let's do this. And so I jumped in and moved to Mobile and helped them start just basically a legal back office support company. And I didn't have any formal sales training or anything like that. It was just, again, that like competitive spirit. And so I didn't know much. I didn't know anything about the legal industry. So to just learn, I spent a lot of time with them, first of all, mm-hmm. of course, and then traveled out of my truck and drove from city to city and meeting with attorneys and really kind of vetting this opportunity and inviting them to be a part of it.
And was it just personal injury lawyers, or was it all legal?
It was. What we basically did, so to have a large personal injury firm and to handle a large volume of cases, they typically have 30, 40, 50 staff that handle all of these cases. And so obviously that's a lot of overhead. And so getting started, a lot of smaller law firms, they struggle to even take on certain cases because they just can't handle it. And so now you're going to some of these smaller law firms and say, hey, we can help you grow your law firm, and you don't have to deal with a big overhead.
Outsource it all.
Yeah, outsource it.
And this was Kangaroo?
Yeah. It was called Kangaroo Legal, which is a funny name. It was kind of a pun because the whole kangaroo court thing is not a good thing. And so we kind of made light of it. But yeah, it was a great learning experience and did that for 3 or 4 years as we were growing that company.
And where'd that lead you?
Yeah. So I love to start things. I love to grow things, build things. I am not the best around mature, flat, we just want to maintain world. Yeah. If there's not a goal, if there's not something exciting to do, I've probably done my job and I'm ready to move on and be a part of something else.
You're a builder.
I love to build. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with like, hey, we've invested the capital that we want. We've hit kind of our numbers. Let's just maintain. Let's just see how this continues to grow. There's nothing wrong with that. It's actually extremely healthy because you can't continue to run at such a fast pace, can just grow. Now, some people do. That's great. But for some investors, for some people, it's let's get it to a point and then let's either sell it and transition that to somebody else that wants to grow. But we had gotten it to a point where the guys I was helping said, okay, that's where we wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And let's hire somebody else to just kind of maintain, oversee. And I said, okay, then help me find something else.
And what was it you found?
Well, it took a while. Again, still down in Mobile. And I was meeting with any business owner that would have a conversation with me that was considering selling. And what I was really looking for was well-established company with no succession plan.
Yeah.
Maybe didn't have family in the business. They built a great business. They have 20, 30, 40 years of customer base, but they were ready to exit. One important thing was they would be willing to stay on for a couple of years to teach me what they did.
Show you how it works.
Yeah. And after seeing a lot of companies, we found a salvage business. Auto recycling company is the fancy name for it. It's a car junkyard.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect scenario. Two brothers, they had built the company. They were 65, 66, and they had the company for 35 years. And they had a great name. They weren't the biggest. They were like number three in the market. But what they did was they bought cars from insurance auctions, came in, dismantled them, took all the doors, all the body.
So they sold the parts.
Yeah, sold all the parts. Sold the engine, transmission to mechanic shops.
Did they have a crusher?
Great. Oh yeah.
Oh, cool.
Had a crusher. it really was cool. I'll never forget. So fast forward, we bought the company, and I step in to run. One of the brothers stepped out. The other stayed along to kind of mentor me. And the first week we go to the insurance auction, we buy $75,000 worth of cars, which was like 40 cars. And I called my wife. I was like, hey, we just got back from the auction. We bought 40 cars. You got to come see them. And so she comes over to the shop and she walks up. Now, she didn't know what to expect. Airbags are blown. Like, these are totaled cars.
Yeah. She's expecting like, to see a car you could drive.
Yeah. And she's like, you spent $75 on what? On this? And so that's just like part of our journey.
Yeah.
I was like, you wouldn't believe like how we can turn this into so much money. This is a business. This is part of it. And so it was funny, but it was a great, great business.
Yeah.
You know, not I would say attractive. It's not the software business or anything like that, but it's a great business that kind of makes the world go around.
So when you were a kid in high school and playing all these sports, did you dream of working at Auto World Salvage? Was that what you wanted to do?
I love working with people and I love working like just business in general is so much fun. It's fun providing a service. It's fun providing a product because you impact a lot of people. Like we only employed like 14 people at Auto World, but all the mechanic shops and body shops that we supply parts for, they all had 10, 12, 14 jobs and just all of those connections and all of those relationships that you build. Like, I don't care what we're selling. And that, to me, that's not what it's about. It's not about exactly what the product or the service is. The core fundamentals of the businesses are typically pretty, pretty simple and the same. So that to me is what's fun.
Now through this journey, and we're not even to Chattanooga yet, but did you have a mentor at all? Or were you kind of just exploring these things on your own and relying on like one of the brothers to kind of show you that path?
Yeah, there was always, I've always had, somebody that I could lean on, whether that's been You know, I've always had a good pastor in my life to help me stay like spiritually grounded and remind me of like what's actually most important. And then like a business coach, you know, somebody that's been ahead of you that you can ask questions to.
Is that someone you pursued or had a relationship with or actually even hired a business coach?
So it's changed in different seasons of my life. Have definitely hired business coaches before because sometimes like you need to. And then other times it's relationships I've had that just lean into. And I have learned, ask questions. Ask questions. If you like, don't feel like you have to know all the answers all the time. You don't.
Isn't that a tough thing, particularly when you're building your career? Because you think when you ask a question, they think, hey, no, I don't know everything.
Yeah. Yeah. We there's this facade that we're supposed to have all the answers.
Yeah.
You're kidding yourself if you do, and everybody else knows.
Set yourself up for failure.
You are. Yeah. You have to, you got to lean on others. You have to ask questions. You got to have some help. I mean, you can do it on your own. You can. It's lonely. I've tried.
Yeah.
I went through a season of my life where I was trying to act like I had it all figured out, and that was super lonely. Loneliest time of my life.
You've said this a couple of times now, and I like the term, a season of my life. I think that's a good way to look at it. It's not a year. It's not this. It's just things you go through and experience. And okay, I've learned from that. And now I move on to the next thing.
That's right. Yeah. That's definitely view life in seasons for sure.
Yeah. So how long were you at Auto World Salvage before and was Chattanooga the next stop?
Yeah. So was at Auto World about 2 years. And my wife and her family's from here in Chattanooga. We always knew we wanted to move back to Chattanooga and had kind of a plan. I always looked at it. I was like, all right, in 10 years, I had like a 10-year plan so we could move back to Chattanooga kind of on our own terms, right?
Yeah.
Like when we were ready, because her family's here and they're great people, great in the community, and had this plan. So my best friend, who actually introduced me and my wife, actually ran track at Samford and introduced us. He lived back here in Chattanooga. He used to always give me a hard time about, when are you moving back? Like we were traveling back up here. My family's from Birmingham and her family's up here. So Mobile was just, I mean, it was a ways away seeing everybody.
It's a 6.5-hour drive.
Yeah. And he used to always give me a hard time about just doing life away from family because that means so much to us. I would always tell him, look, I've got a plan. And he would say, look, life doesn't work out that way. Like, life doesn't always go to your plan. Mm-hmm. Come back here and work here, and you'll figure it out if you come back here. Well, so his name was Cameron Bean, and we talked every week. And again, he was the one telling me, life doesn't always just work out like you think it's going to. Well, he went out on a run one day and was hit and killed. And I talked to him like the day before.
And they still do a run in Cameron's honor, don't they? And,
yeah.
And that was on
Sequoia, not Sequoia.
No, Moccasin Bend.
Moccasin Bend, thank you. My goodness, both of us went blank. Yep, that's right.
Yeah, that was about, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you all were friends. I'm sorry for that.
Yeah. Well, 2 months from his passing, we were moved back.
Yeah.
Like, it changed my life.
I bet it did.
Yeah. And I talked to his dad 2 days ago. Like, still super close to his family. Talked to his brother yesterday. Like, love the Beans.
Well, you're probably part of their family.
Yeah. And so that was just one, that was like the moment of, all right, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Jump in. Let's go. Like, and so we literally in 2 months, we had sold everything that we had in Mobile and moved back.
Did you have anything lined up or did you just come and say, I'm going to see what happens?
So in that 2 months, I told my wife, I'll never forget it. We were leaving Chattanooga, going around the bend, heading back to Mobile. And I looked at her on the way out. We had a one-year-old at the time. And I said, I think it's time. Like, we've got to get back. Let's go. I was like, I'm going to start knocking on doors. And if anything's open, I'm kicking you down, but still see what doors open. And had hundreds of meetings, it felt like, and got connected to Ben Brown. That they were a couple guys, Ben, that were just starting Alderman Holdings, a small private equity firm.
Yeah.
And met with them, really connected. They were gracious enough and said, yeah, why don't you join us? And
they had to love your experience, you know, Kangaroo and Auto Salvage. I mean, those are exactly what, kind of what their business model is, isn't it?
It was a great fit, because what they desired to do was what I was doing basically in Mobile. And so it really was a good fit for all of us. And that was a good partnership. I was with them 4 or 5 years.
Talk a little bit about that, how that led to what you're doing now, because the way I understand it is Alderman Holdings would identify companies they want to buy, mm-hmm. and then you guys would come in and bring in someone to manage it do the things that you need to do. And that led to you getting into the stone business.
Yeah. Another legal to Auto Salvage to then stone business. Quite the journey.
Exactly what you wanted to do in high school.
Exactly how I drew it up. Yeah. So joining Alderman Holdings, the point was to try and identify companies in and around Chattanooga that were great, solid companies without a succession plan. And we looked for, it took us a little over a year to find the first company. But when we did, we actually found two and ended up acquiring four while I was there. And the whole premise was these are great businesses, but don't have someone to take to steward them forward. That was a big thing for us, was steward them forward for the long term. Like, we didn't have any real desire to, we weren't going to approach it like we're just going to flip it or sell it. Mm-hmm. If a buyer came along, fine, but we weren't going to we didn't have like the 5 year and sell it.
Like the Wall Street private equity firms are just going to take everything out of it and try and flip it as quick as they can.
Yeah, that's right. Because we love this community here in Chattanooga. We're going to continue to live in this community, and we want to grow strong businesses for and in this community. And so as we began looking around, one of the opportunities we found was a company called Majestic Stone that had been around for about 15 years. And the business owners just kind of really got it to a point that they couldn't get it any further. Mm-hmm. And so they were looking at bringing on some partners and to really, again, steward that company forward. And after a couple months so we acquired it and then really watched the company for a couple months to figure out, okay, does one of us need to step in or can we elevate or promote someone from within?
And what's Majestic Stone do?
Yeah, so we own quarries. We're a stone quarrier and fabricator. So we don't sell stone to like contractors and homeowners. We sell to distributors that then sell to contractors. So we produce stone. So we have quarries in and around Dayton, Tennessee. So about an hour north of Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. Crab Orchard stone, so landscaping stone, and then stone for the exterior of homes or commercial buildings as well, mm-hmm. like thin veneer. And there's a great project going on the back of Lookout called Macklemore. Uh-huh. And we were blessed to supply and produce all the stone for—
That's a lot of stone.
That's a lot of stone.
That's a heck of a lot.
That's right. We love the Hortons. We love Macklemore.
I bet so. You did. It's been great. Question on the MO you look for businesses, you know, a good business that doesn't have a succession plan. Mm-hmm. How many don't have a succession plan? The majority of them, or do you find that to be, you know, 10-20% of them?
It would surprise you the number that don't.
Yeah, I would think the majority do not.
Yeah, for sure. Like they have ideas in their head, especially small businesses that we were looking at.
Yeah.
We're talking, you know, $3 to $15 million revenue companies. So, I mean, our target was like $1 million to $1 to $5 million EBITDA. And so those are on the smaller end. They're normally, you know, owner operators. They think that they have a plan or they have a desire for a plan. But when it gets to that point, a lot of them really don't. They were planning to have a plan.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
You know, I mentioned to you earlier when we were talking that I grew up in a family business. And I'll tell you, one of the most important things my dad did was probably back in the 80s, 90s, connected with the University of Memphis and went through the family business seminar. And that led to succession planning and things like that. So I've got a couple of brothers who actually run the business, and I get to be in Chattanooga and not in Memphis, and I get to play on podcasts.
That's awesome.
Yeah, if you could set it up that way, it works out pretty well. But the point being that those type businesses, they've worked 15, 20 years building it. And it's, as you said, there's not a season. It's just ongoing and ongoing. I'll get to it. Well, you never really get to it unless you purposely get to it.
Yeah, it's a very intentional process. And it takes time and energy and really cooperation, intentional cooperation on both sides. Mm-hmm. Like if you're passing it down, what is that process going to look like? Like how does the founder, how do the owners actually get value out of it?
Yeah.
You know, while passing it down. And it really takes, it's something special when done well.
I don't think the majority of the public understands that a lot of these family businesses, when they get passed down, aren't really handed to anyone. You're setting up a plan that says, well, you know what? Mom and dad are retiring, so this is their retirement, or this is where we're going to buy the business from. There's a financial transaction that happens.
That's right. And the incoming, you know, whoever's taking it out, whoever they're succeeding it to, is actively paying that off.
Yeah.
It's not a, here you go.
It's not a gift.
No, exactly. That's exactly right. And that's what makes it so tricky for a lot of people. And that's why sometimes business owners find it easier to sell.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because sometimes...
Well, family can get messy.
Yeah, exactly. But man, when it's done well, it's a really good thing. But yeah, so in that transition, we bought Majestic Stone. And a couple months in, I ended up stepping in as CEO. And started to really kind of rebuild and grow that company. Thankfully, they had a great quarry operator and great processing manager. What my role was really to do is just grow the team, mm-hmm. but actually really build a sales and marketing team around. Like they had great quarries that produced good product. It wasn't a matter of good product. It was a matter of they were very reactive, very just waiting on the phones to ring to get orders. Yeah. And we built a sales team that was more proactive. How do we get, you know, everything from like sample boards and product more visual, like building? Everybody thinks, well, just build a website and people will go to it. No, it takes a lot more than that. So
they didn't bring you in for your stone expertise.
Exactly. Thank you. That's where I was going. Exactly. If it had been up to me to quarry anything or cut anything, we'd have been in trouble.
But the important part is they brought you in for your business expertise, because there are a lot of people who start businesses because they know a particular thing, whether it's a food product, whether it's a product like stone, or they're experts at
it. That's right.
But they're not experts at business.
Yeah.
And a lot of business comes because of word of mouth, or people know him, or you need to talk to Charlie. He knows everything you need to know about stone. But Charlie doesn't have sample boards. Charlie doesn't have a sales organization that says, you know what, we're not going to wait on the phone to ring or people to go to the website. We've got to go out and attract them to it.
Yeah, that's right. There's so much competition now that, you know, everybody used to, I talked to my grandfather who, you know, owned a business, you know, many years ago, and everything was so regional. Everything was so territorial. Like he knew that he could drive to go see some of his customers, and there wasn't much threat from like mm-hmm. others in other states or, you know, coming to his markets. And now, I mean, there are stone companies in Wisconsin and Minnesota that are heavily advertising in the Southeast where we are, and they can do that through, whether it's Facebook advertising, LinkedIn advertising, like you, your reach is so much farther now than it was. And so just represents a lot of different challenges and also opportunities, because that's how we've gotten in a lot of other markets as well. But, you know, 3 years into growing Majestic, got a phone call from a local group here that said, we've been watching what you guys are doing at Majestic, and we'd love to buy you guys. And so in 2019, so we bought Majestic in 2016, the middle of 2019, actually were bought out by another local group here in Chattanooga, the guys that own Horizon Stone, which has been a great partnership. The caveat was that I stay. Mm-hmm. And at first, again, it was like, I'm not sure that was the original plan. Didn't know that I was going to be in the stone business for this long. But what's fun is that from just experiencing the stone industry, began to see just opportunities of, all right, how do we do Stone better. And you know, just a couple of years ago, built a company called, you mentioned it earlier, called Stone Loads, which is an online marketplace for natural stone. And the whole premise there is most quarries are mom and pop. Most quarries are small and they don't have sales teams. They don't have ways to consistently get their product in front of distributors, in front of people that buy it. Yeah.
That really goes back to your original business, the Kangaroo Legal, because you were talking about a lot of those personal injury lawyers being small and only to a certain point and don't have those resources to build out their organization. You're doing the same thing in stuff.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. How do you bring information and how do you just elevate an industry?
Yeah.
And how do you bring people together? I think I was thinking about this last night. Are there common themes through my career so far that kind of just resonate with me? And like, what do I enjoy so much about kind of my path is everything I've done has been in some ways about bringing people together. Like in the salvage business, there was some legal stuff going on in Alabama and they asked a handful of salvage business owners to go actually speak in front of the Alabama Senate because they were trying to pass some laws that were going to negatively affect us. And I found myself like on the floor of the Senate meeting with Alabama senators and talking to them about how it impacted the industry. And there beside me were like five or six other salvage business owners and how we were competitors. But during that time, we were doing what was best for the industry.
Yeah.
And super cool looking back on some of that. And same thing with illegal outsourcing was providing a service for others, like, you know, really kind of bringing people together. And now in Majestic and Stone Loads, I spent a lot of time traveling and going to see quarries from Idaho and Montana and Wisconsin and places I never thought I'd be, talking to them about rock, talking to them about stone, but providing a resource where, I mean, yeah, we're competing, but here's a resource that really has the opportunity to elevate the industry that I truly believe like things can be win-win. It's not a zero-sum game where it has to, like, everything, if you win, I lose. Like, we can both win.
I want to ask you a couple more questions before we run out of time. And one of them is, you mentioned bringing people together. What is it you look for when you're doing that? You're talking to a lot of different people. What is the thing that clicks in your mind and says, okay, I could work with this person?
A lot of times it's their willingness to work. You know, it so has to go both ways. I believe that everybody, you know, there's a side of everybody that wants to work with people. Mm-hmm. There's a side of us all that want to connect and we want to add value to others. Trust me, I have been told no a thousand times, thousands of times. And there are definitely people that you quickly realize they don't want to work with you. And they're just interested in themselves, and that's okay. Totally understand, maybe the wrong time. Like, you never know what's going on in somebody's life. You never know what they're going through right now.
Great
and so
point.
I always look at it going, okay, you maybe that's a closed door forever. Maybe it's just for now. But people are good. They are.
Based on your past, this may be an unfair question, but what's next?
What's next? I have no clue.
That's the best answer.
No
Patrick.
Clue.
Best answer.
Don't really care.
You know what? That's even better, but you'll know it when you see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm confident that things happen for a reason. And I'm done with trying to figure it out.
You know what? That's a great position to be in. One of my favorite quotes is an old John Lennon quote, and I got to make sure I get it right, is life is what happens when you're busy making plans.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because you just, you know, you can make all the plans in the world and guess what? I got something else for you.
Yeah, that's right. And that doesn't excuse you from making a plan. I have so many ideas and so many plans and I'm going to pursue them all.
Yeah.
And it's so important to, like, you know, what's in front of you, what you do see. Like, don't be flippantly just like going with the wind. It's not that. It's having a plan. It is like seeing what's in front of you, walking the light that you have and doing your best with it and treating it. Like, don't burn any bridges along the way. You never know how they're going to come back when you're going to need them. And so, like, definitely super focused on Majestic Stone and Stone Loads right now. And then the next, whatever the next opportunity comes, like, you'll know it. you're not going to miss it.
That's great advice. And so before I get to the last question, I do want to remind our listeners who makes all this possible. And that's a big thank you to the Tennessee Valley Authority for sponsoring My Morning Cup. Follow TVA on social media to learn more about its multifaceted mission of service, and visit tva.com/do-good-here to explore exciting TVA career opportunities. All right, last question. You're a little bit younger than the typical person who answers this question, but I think you've got a lifetime of experience and a unique ability to look back at it. So what would you tell your 25-year-old self is important for a happy life?
Don't worry. Don't worry. You'll find a way. You don't have enough money. It's okay. Like even like your kids just add a different dynamic. I've got a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, but like they'll be okay.
Yeah.
It's so much about like what's ahead. What are you going to face? You can't plan for everything, but it's okay. Like stay grounded, be good to people, and it'll work out.
And that kind of dovetails back to what you said earlier about not burning bridges.
Yeah.
Be good to people. Karma's a real thing.
It is, yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Well, Patrick, I really enjoyed this. You've got a fascinating story so far, and you've got a lot still left to write.
Yeah, I'm excited. I believe our best days are ahead of us.
Well, I agree with you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for listening to My Morning Cup, a podcast by Consta Media Advisors. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend. I release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to podcasts.